Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist.
Hi, Steven. Good to be back with you as we get ready for 2015.
Yeah, it's and I wish we could start this year's podcast with a little bit happier story, but I think it wouldn't be good if we didn't start without talking about the Sam Akuwachu, and you pronounce it correctly if I didn't, case with Baylor. Kind of wrap up quick what happened is that Sam was transferred from Boise State to Baylor back in the spring of 2013. Now, 6 weeks into his first semester on campus, a complaint that was filed against him that he had he was accused of rape. Waco PD and Baylor investigated that, did not take any action. In the spring of 2014, he was indicted and removed from Baylor's roster and did not practice with the team pending resolution of that case. Nobody knew about any of this until the summer of this year, and we found out about it about a week before the trial started, and Baylor's season went from looking absolutely awesome to being not great in terms of national perception. Kevin, what do you want to add to that part of it?
Well, obviously, you know, where we are today right now is that obviously the trial took place 2 weeks ago. He was, Akuwachu was convicted. He was sentenced to 6 months in prison for the sexual assault of the former Baylor soccer player. She has now since transferred. The university has announced an internal inquiry to investigate some of the mishaps that have possibly occurred during this investigation. Obviously, there was a statement that was released by Boise State head coach, or then Boise State head coach Chris Peterson, who is now at Washington, that said that he had apprised Baylor's coach Art Briles regarding this, apprised him of what had happened with Akuwachu's situation with Boise before he transferred to Baylor. That statement was a little bit general, although I think the media might have taken that to be a little bit more specific. I didn't get that sense when I looked at it. However, but having said that, since then, in that time, you see, you saw stories where Boise State early in the week released a statement saying that they had no reports of Akuwachu have been violent toward women. Of course, they also cited some privacy laws, which could only be subject to openness when it because of a subpoena, which there was a subpoena and there was some testimony from a girl at Boise State at the trial. And then Baylor president and chancellor Judge Starr announced on Friday of this week that it would be an independent third party group that would be conducting the investigation, which I think is the most important thing that's developing out of in the most recent news of this, is the fact that Baylor announced the inquiry using a third party entity to conduct the investigation. Because I think if Baylor had kept it internal, like it appeared to be from the original outset of the announcement, I think it would have had a real problem with national perception about how comprehensive would this investigation have been in terms of, you know, finding out the mistakes and finding out who was exactly involved in this and why these mistakes took place. I think this third party helps take some of the heat off of Baylor from that perspective. Obviously, the Associate Dean of Student Affairs, Bethany McCraw, will probably be under some tremendous scrutiny in the way that she conducted this in terms of that. I think the first major mistake that Baylor made here is that after the incident occurred in October of 2013, that Akuwachu and the victim, who had some overlaps in their class schedules, were not immediately separated. And you could talk about, well, it was so deep into the semester there really wasn't anything you can do. I don't buy that for a second. If there's an incident involving athletes or even students for that matter regarding an assault of this nature or any other type of incident that could put another person in harm's way, the school has got to do everything it can to separate the two parties from each other so that the victim who encountered this will have the feeling of at least some measure of safety. The Baylor didn't do that, It's a major mistake. Obviously, now they've learned from it. We'll just have to see what kind of repercussions come from this. It's going to take a long time, I would suspect, maybe going on to the end of the year before we really know what the results of this will be. The other part is the fact that this administrative position that's going to go in the athletic department, who will oversee student athlete behavior issues. And what we don't know yet, because this announcement is still fresh as we're recording this, is how much will this person be working with the Dean of Student Affairs when it comes to something like this? How much will it be working with local and state and or federal authorities regarding anything of this nature? And what kind of enforcement power will they be given? I think those are questions that still will need to be answered as this process unfolds. But I think now that Baylor's taken the right steps in regard to addressing this, I have said all along, Stephen, that I don't find much fault with what Art Briles and the Baylor football program went through here. Should, I guess maybe in hindsight, when the incident happened, or when, at least when Sam was indicted, should Baylor have just removed him from the program? Probably. That probably would have been the best move that they could have made. But if these depression issues that Ukwuachu was suffering from were such that maybe he could have been a harm to himself outside of in a structured environment and a harm to other folks, perhaps maybe keeping him on a schedule might have been the best thing for him. Obviously, now he's learning some tremendously hard lessons behind prison. And the thing is, now he's going to be registered as a sex offender, I believe, and he's going to have to live with that for the rest of his life. And it's going to impact him, whatever he does. I mean, I realize that there are people out there, Stephen, who are upset that maybe the sentence wasn't long enough. I believe there might have been some statutes that said that maybe this was the max that they could have gone. I don't know about that for a fact. What I can tell you, though, is regardless of whatever the length the prison sentence is, I think it's long enough and the damage has been done to him so that whatever he does for the rest of his life, that's going to follow him for the rest of his life. And there's nothing more that he can do.
Yeah. One of the things that we had talked about, a couple of things comes up. When we talked about the transfer, that was really something that, other than Art Briles' honesty and what he was told, there's nothing, there's no law you're going to pass. There were no complaints against Sam in Boise State that were documented on record. That guy was going to another D1 program, and there's no rule you could put in place that would prevent him from going. Because right, all they really had on him in terms of documentation was that he'd checked into a clinic. So I think that they kind of latched on that because all the other information was on lockdown, so it was something you could write about.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen where other talking heads and media members say, well, he just knows. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Coaches, by and large, are micromanagers. That's who they are, and that's how they work, and that they are going to know everything. However, and there are some cases, though, where some coaches where – when it comes to things of this nature, this isn't their job. I remember Rod Gilmore from ESPN making a comment earlier in the week saying, really, when you look at something like this, that should Art have gone farther? Probably. And I'm quoting Gilmore here. Mm-hmm. Should Art have gone further? Yes. But is it his job to really do that? Not to that great extent. That's why you've got a compliance department. That's why you've got a big athletic department that will be charged with investigating this stuff. There are some hard lessons here. There are some mistakes that Baylor made, and now they just have to move on from it. And obviously, and to be honest with you, Stephen, there's a part of me that still believes that Baylor has probably lost in the court of public opinion by the vast majority of people who are tangibly or, you know, following this to a small extent, or maybe, you know, they might have just heard some bits and pieces of it. For all those of us who are wrapped into this, we obviously are following this day to day, and we know what we're looking at. However, that being said, The for those folks who are not really so connected to this, they've already formed their opinions after what happened in the first 24 to 48 hours, and their personal news cycle has moved on. And there's not a lot that Baylor could do about this except just go on day to day and just, you know, continue to operate their program in the best way that they know possible. And in time, this story will probably fade. I mean, it happened with Alabama with Jonathan Taylor, the transfer from Georgia, when he was kicked off their program, when he was kicked off from Baylor's program, from Georgia's program for a similar situation. TCU went through its own issues a couple of years ago with its major drug bust, but that program has since moved on from that major hit. So it just happens. And so that's just what we, so Baylor's in the same place now. It's just going to take some time for this program to just move on.
Right. And I think the biggest thing, it's what we talked about at the upside of this, is that, you know, the transfer, it's what happened after the initial accusation and what Baylor did, but also more importantly now is what Baylor does going forward to make sure that this type of situation doesn't come up again. Obviously, you don't want that to happen ever on your campus, but that if it does happen, you react to it quickly and proactively instead of letting it kind of fester for a period of years.
All right.
Okay. And when we come back, we are going to change subjects and hopefully talk about something that you will enjoy and not find negative about Baylor.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from Sikkim Sports. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And we are back, and we're going to talk a little bit about recruits, and I'm going to save us a little bit of time. Every one of these recruits is a 2016 graduate. Every one of these recruits is a four-star. And if you want to know who's recruiting them, just look at the AP Top 25, and pretty much everybody on there has offered just about every one of these guys. Would that be an accurate statement, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of big names, but if you're looking at it from Baylor's perspective, Baylor has a legitimate chance in all of these guys. So that's the one thing to keep in mind there.
Okay, we'll start out with Shaheem Carter. He's from Kentwood, Louisiana. He plays quarterback and corner. He's being recruited as an athlete. Now, I believe he was committed to Alabama for over a year,
right,
and he decommitted. And he runs a 4.4 40, so sounds like the kind of guy Browse will like.
Yeah, Baylor offered him earlier this year. He had been committed to Alabama at the time, and one of the things that's key about this is the fact that because of him being in Louisiana, Baylor defensive backs coach Carlton Buckles is from Louisiana, so he's got some great connections down there. And I think once Baylor found out that they were in a position that maybe they could, if they offered him, that he would give Baylor a serious look, then Baylor moved on. And the important thing here is that Carter visited last week. He also had a chance to take a look at the campus. I think he was there a couple of days. This was a couple of weeks after he had decommitted. He had decommitted from Alabama on August the 10th. He's a Rivals 100 prospect, ranked number 76. And I think what's important to note here is the fact that Baylor got him on campus. He took a hard look at some other schools that are involved. I don't think anything's going to happen at this time. I think he's going to probably take some officials. The way it sounds, he's going to take some officials and then probably decide probably after the high school football season, unless anything were to change. But Baylor's definitely in this. They've got a legitimate shot. I think they really would like it for him to be in the secondary. And it's just another one of those parts of the process that's just going to have to take some time. And that's why Baylor's recruiting class is at 13 commitments. Is just going to slowly build over these last 5.5 months. Tremendous athlete, though.
Yeah, and you always say recruiting's weird. I've always found it to be kind of like trying to get a prom date at a small town high school where everybody cheats on each other.
Right.
Because it's like you get a date and then you look around for somebody better.
Right. Well, but in this case, when you're leaving Alabama, who's supposed to be, the hottest girl at the dance, and then you move, or allegedly the hottest girl at the dance, and you want to look at some other options, maybe you find out that the hottest girl at the dance, it just isn't what she's cracked up to be. So, I don't know. I think from Baylor's sake, it looks though that Baylor made a strong enough case along with some other folks to at least get Carter to take a second look and reopen his mind to some other possibilities. And now we'll just see what happens with him.
Yeah, and it really says something about the way recruiting is going at Baylor now that at one point in time, Baylor offering a guy that is getting an offer from Alabama, that would have been a dream.
Right.
And
that started to change over the last 2-3 years. And in particular, I think that really started to change with by getting Davion Hall. When Davion, you know, had committed to Baylor way back, and I think it was, what, February of 2013? About 14 months before he actually signed with Baylor last year. I think the important thing to note there is the fact that Alabama was still working on him to whatever extent will be anybody's guess. But the fact that Alabama was involved and Baylor managed to keep him from leaving Texas and going to Tuscaloosa was an important thing. So,
okay, the next one on our list is McTelvin Agim, mm-hmm. and he's from Hope, Arkansas. Somebody mm-hmm. else is from there. He was a strong side defensive end. He is 6'3", 269 pounds, has a 345-pound bench, and says he's going to announce on September 5th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also announced, too, we have it in the Baylor Blitz for those. Matt Clare talked with him. He's going to make the announcement. I believe it's going to be at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The four finalists that he has said that are in this are Baylor, Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Ole Miss. I think what's important to note here is the fact that he has been to Baylor most recently within the last couple of weeks. He's taken multiple visits there, although there still seems to be, in my judgment, that Arkansas is the team to beat because the fact that he's had some family that has played at Arkansas. The other fact is that when you're an Arkansas top-rated kid, that you just don't leave the state. And it would be a huge blow for Brett Bielema if he were to leave. Of course, Baylor doesn't care about that. But I will say this, but I personally think, and I've posted this before, that I really believe that this is a decision between Baylor and Arkansas. Now, he's going to make this announcement at a family reunion on the next Saturday, the 5th of September. It'll be the day after Baylor plays its opener at SMU. So everyone's going to know because he's also said that once he makes the decision, he's done. He's not going to reopen it. And so Baylor will find out where it stands with this situation with him.
Okay, would the fact, you know, you've got Oakman and you've got Billings, and if they both declared they're going NFL draft, and they're probably going pretty high, does their development at Baylor, is that something that a guy like Agim's going to look at?
Well, it's important. I mean, I think one of the things that Baylor's trying to play on here, the fact is that Agim has a relationship with Davion Hall from their Texarkana days. So I think that's something that they're trying to lean on because McTelvin, you know, lived in that area at one point before he's, you know, moved up to Hope. So I think the Baylor's trying to make sure that they can, you know, use that whatever leverage they think they've got with that relationship to make it one of the selling points for Agim to pick them. If they get him, and remember, Baylor was one of the first two to offer him with Arkansas. In fact, it could be debated that the two of them offered him within an hour of each other. Who went first is a chicken and egg discussion, but I mean, I think Baylor's got a real shot here. I think the fact that he visited and was back speaks to the fact that I think Baylor's making up some ground. I still think Arkansas is the team to beat here, but it's going to be important for, you know, if Baylor's made the case to try and do something different here to maybe help him reconsider, then they got a shot.
Okay, moving along, we've got Brandon Bowen. And he is a weak side defensive end from Trophy Club, Texas, 6'5", 230 pounds, and got a 36-inch vertical leap. So sounds like the kind of long-rangey guy that would fit in what Baylor likes to do on their line.
He's a tremendous athlete. I think one of the – if there was a flaw with him, maybe he needs to kind of work on some toughness, but I heard through channels that he had a really good opener on Friday night against Flower Mound. His stat sheet, if you go read the Baylor Blitz, was ridiculous what he did. He's a great athlete. He's got a lot to build on. He will play defensive end wherever he commits. He has said within the last 2 weeks that his two finalists are Baylor and USC. Now, USC, the kink here is the fact that it doesn't look like USC has offered him, although he has said that when Byron Nelson reaches its bye week, the week of September 17th, 18th, and 19th, that he would go out there and take a visit to Los Angeles. If he does that and the USC offers, then I think Baylor's got an issue here. But if that trip doesn't come off, or if USC doesn't wind up offering, or You know, just something doesn't work in that direction. I think he's Baylor's to lose. I think that Baylor has made such a tremendous move on him. And he was here along with McTelvin Agum for Meet the Bears on the 8th of August. So, and he's made a couple of trips there to Waco. I think it's really important for him and for Baylor, obviously, for him to stay in the state. The one thing about him, and I've seen him in person, I've interviewed him in person, he's got huge hands, Stephen. It's one of those things that, you know, it's a God-given gift, and the fact that he's just got tremendous athletic ability. He's the state high jump champ in Class 6A, so that tells you how much he can get up. And I've seen him play basketball. He'd be a tremendous athlete. He's also number 50 on the Rivals 100 list. And he says that he will be making his announcement shortly after he finishes visiting USC. And then, so that's probably going to be a late September if it goes the way he says it's going to go.
Okay. And the next guy that we have is Chris Daniels, defensive tackle out of Euless Trinity. He's 6'3", 301 pounds. I think, you know, the guys that have been saying, hey, what's Baylor going to do on the line? If they can lie on some of these guys after Oakman and Billings and Blackshear and Palmer all move in, they're going to have some strong guys coming in.
Yeah, Daniels is one of those kids that he had said the week of August 24th that he was going to name a top five on August 28th. Decided to change his mind. From what it sounds like, he's not really sure what he wants to do. Euless Trinity has a tremendous season opener against De La Salle out of California, the number one team in the state. That game kicked off on Saturday the 29th. And I think it sounds like that the top five programs that are involved for him in this top five that he's going to be releasing here, this is speculation on my part, are going to be Michigan, Ohio State, Baylor, TCU, and Texas A&M. But he has family ties out to Michigan that I'm of the belief that probably Michigan is his leader. So if anyone has a lot of – I think all these Texas teams have a lot to make up with him in terms of ground. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens here. I know Baylor's in this. To what extent Baylor's in this, I don't know yet. But if Baylor comes out on this top five whenever it's released, I'm sure that Daniels will not be announcing anything anytime soon in terms of a decision. I think he'll take some officials before he announces.
And our last one that we're going to talk about is Devin DuVernay. And Devin is from Sachse, Texas. And he is 5'11", 193, and does a 4.4. 40, he is being recruited as a wide receiver. And would Baylor be recruiting him as a wide receiver or as an athlete?
Yeah, he's a wide receiver, and he's actually one of probably their top target as a wide receiver, Stephen. He's been a guy that they've been after for the longest time. They were one of the first programs to offer him back in 2014. DuVernay, not long ago, there was a story that was written by Jason Howell, our regional analyst for Rivals, that he had talked about the fact that he's going to take some officials. He's going to LSU on September 18th. He's going to Ohio State on September 26th. He's going to be taking one to Alabama as well, which I believe will be that second weekend in October, which will be about the 9th. And then it looks like he'll probably take one to Baylor after the season is over. And maybe Oklahoma. It's not really sure exactly how that's going to go. But I think Baylor feels like they're still in a really good position with him. This is a decision I believe will probably not happen until well after the season. Now, he's got a twin brother by the name of Donovan, who's a cornerback for Sachse. And he's recently come out with some favorites. Baylor's among those. Donovan is going to be making his decision here, it appears, within the next month or so, and once Donovan decides, whether or not that has any impact on Devin's decision, I don't know. There has been the talk that the two want to be a package deal somewhere. I don't think that's necessarily the case, especially if you've got Donovan announcing far earlier than his brother. And so we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens there. If Baylor gets them both, great. If they get one of them, obviously, they had their choice. I would suspect that they would want Devin. But I think Donovan's a kid, though, whose stock has really grown and has really made a difference. The only two schools that I believe that are looking at Devin that are also looking at Donovan, where they both have offers, are Baylor and TCU at this point. So these other officials that Devin has taken to Alabama and LSU and Ohio State, Donovan hasn't been offered by. So I think those are some interesting dynamics and work there. But again, I think a decision will be coming toward the end of the recruiting season. Could it happen on February 3rd, 2016, National Signing Day?
And it's, you know, one thing I noticed that Baylor and TCU seem to be coming up. Maybe it's the fact that their schools are similar size or close to each other, but they seem to be coming up as being like really competing head to head for a lot of these kids.
Yeah, they are. They're. I mean, both these programs, of course, it also goes to show you when Baylor has won consecutive state championships and, consecutive Big 12 championships, and also as well as TCU going to the Peach Bowl last year, winning in 12 games, sharing the Big 12 championship. It just goes to show you that they have made some tremendous strides.
Okay, and last question on recruiting. The stuff that has been going on, the distractions for Baylor, are other coaches trying to take advantage of this? I mean, obviously they are.
Yeah, I mean, it always happens. I mean, there's going to be coaches. I mean, there's been speculation that other, you know, that other coaches from other conferences or within the Big 12 it's been discussed that, you know, they're telling kids about, you know, Baylor's future, Art Briles' future. That just happens everywhere. And so the question is, the kids are just going to have to believe what they want to believe. And obviously actions speak louder than words, and it's just all part of it. I don't really take any of that seriously. And the kids just have to find out for themselves if they're really serious about Baylor, what it is that's going on here. And I think that goes back to kids who have to do their homework on all this stuff, rather than just being led by the nose by whichever coach they're talking to. They have to be really smart about this and investigate and really find out what's going on, good, bad, and different, so they'll know exactly what it is that's going on before they make what you hope will be a well-informed decision.
Okay. Well, we are going to do a short Sikkim Sportscast for this first one, and I think we're going to try to do it on Thursdays, and there aren't any games to talk about right now, and we'll talk about the other Big 12 teams as we start getting closer to the season. So, Kevin, any parting thoughts?
Well, just the fact that, you know, the Big 12 season will start, or everybody gets going the Labor Day week, and of course TCU gets it started on Thursday at Minnesota. Baylor will start at SMU on Friday. Both of those are ESPN national television games, and then of course, you know, Texas will be playing at Notre Dame that weekend as well. It's obviously an important week for the Big 12 because it needs to get off to a big start. There was a lot of talk about the fact that, you know, the fact that this conference doesn't have a conference championship game, and I know there were some comments about whether or not the Big 12 would seek any kind of waiver to try and get a championship game, and then the Big 12 athletic directors thought better of it and decided no. And I'm of that opinion too. I just think that I just have this belief that there really just needs to be some common sense here. The reason why, and I'll go to my grave with this, I just really believe that the reason why Baylor, then TCU, were left out of the national semifinals was because Ohio State was playing exceptionally well. And when Ohio State won the Big Ten championship game over Wisconsin 59-0, the same night that Baylor played Kansas State and the same day that TCU played Iowa State, that really just made a huge difference. And that was the X factor here. And that was the reason why that Ohio State did this. And so that's just the way it is. And, you know, I don't know. We're only 1 year into this process of the national playoff, Steven. So I think a lot of the knee-jerk reaction of this has got to happen or that's got to happen, this is where the instant that world is destructive, because it makes everybody make decisions or consider ideas when you don't let the process have a chance to settle in and sort itself out. If you get this within 2 to 3 years where this keeps happening, then obviously you make a change. But to keep making changes, then it completes it, disrupt the the continuity and the credibility of the system. That's what hurts.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is that, like with with Florida State last year. You know, Notre Dame doesn't get that offensive pass interference call. Mm-hmm. Either Baylor or TCU is in the playoffs because they were dying for a reason to leave Florida State out of the playoffs because they weren't playing that well. But if you get, like, say, if you had ended up with a Big Ten champion with two losses or something like that, but you happen to have 5-1 loss teams in there, and that meant two of them were getting left out, one undefeated, 5-1 loss, and one of them was going to get out. And you're right, you can't keep preparing for last year's scenario.
You just have to move on.
Mm-hmm. And some years it's going to work out perfectly, and other years it's going to be a little bit weird. But without expansion, and there's a lot of talk, but there's nothing on the horizon, a championship game doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the two teams will have already played each other.
Yeah, unless you – and I just think that let's just have it out. If Baylor and TCU have the seasons that everyone thinks they're going to have, then obviously, you know, when they meet on November 27th in Fort Worth, then that'll serve its purpose at this time. Baylor, I think TCU will have wrapped its season that Friday. Baylor will still have one more game to play, of course, but just go play and just let it speak for itself. And I think that's all you can do at this point.
Okay. Well, that wraps it up for us, and we will see you next time on the Sikkim Sportscast.